Welcome to the podcast, Amazing Tales from Off and On Connecticut's Beaten Path, and I'm your host, Mike Allen. Well, if you've ever had the misfortune to live through a disaster, you know it sticks with you forever. Such is the case with the nearly 40-year-old event in Bridgeport, where an apartment building that was under construction had a cataclysmic failure. It resulted in tons of concrete slab flooring collapsing onto 28 construction workers, killing all of them. Well, here to share his memories of that unbelievable time in Bridgeport's history is the man who was mayor at the time, the Honorable Thomas Busey. Tom, as he prefers to be called, is currently a partner at the Bridgeport law firm of Willinger, Willinger & Busey. He's going to be along in just a moment with his sobering recollections of that event. This week's trivia question, robots don't have parents per se, but this Connecticut man is considered the father of robots. Who is he? Well, stick around after the main program for the answer, because then you'll know the topic for next week's show. Amazing Tales from Off and On Connecticut's Beaten Path is brought to you by our sponsor, Yale New Haven Health. When people need the best quality health care, there's a reason they turn to Yale New Haven Health. In 1826, Yale New Haven Hospital became Connecticut's very first hospital. They were the first hospital in the U.S. to use chemotherapy. Yale New Haven was the first to introduce insulin pumps for diabetic patients. And they introduced the world's first intensive care unit for newborns. For more information about Yale New Haven Health, visit YNHHS.org. That's YNHHS.org. Thursday, April 23rd, 1987, was a chilly spring day. Afternoon temps were only in the 40s. The location was downtown Bridgeport, just off exit 2 of the expressway, if you know it, that carries both routes 8 and 25 to Interstate 95. There was a construction project there, one that every motorist saw each day as progress was being made and they drove by. The steel columns for the 16-story apartment building were hard to miss. They were already up and in place, and in fact, now the concrete floors were being lifted into place. Now, they were using a process called lift slab construction. Completely finished and cured concrete floors were hauled into place by gigantic machinery, lifting them up to connect to the steel columns. Well, this $17 million project was more than just a fun thing to see go up. It was an important financial shot in the arm for a struggling city at the time. Bridgeport had been one of the more prominent industrial centers on the East Coast, but those days, frankly, were over, and a lot of outside investment in the city had dried up. And that made the L'Ambiance Plaza project all the more important. It was a step toward turning the city around. Well, alas, the building would never be completed. It collapsed in one of the biggest disasters experienced in the state of Connecticut, and certainly the biggest one that ever hit Bridgeport. 28 construction workers would be trapped in the concrete rubble which fell upon them. None of them would survive. I was an active journalist back at that time, and it was the latest in a series of unspeakable disasters to hit Connecticut during the 1980s, and it just seemed like the state was getting more than its fair share. Well, here today to relive what it was like to manage this situation is the Honorable Thomas Busey. He was the man who was the mayor of Bridgeport at that time. He prefers, though, to just be called Tom. So, Tom, when I think back on my years in journalism in Connecticut, I was there for 10 years and had some pretty incredible stories that I covered that were not too dissimilar from what we're going to talk about today, like the collapse of the Hartford Civic Center roof, the collapse of the I-95 Mianus River Bridge in Greenwich. But the one we're here to talk about today is the L'Ambiance Plaza site in Bridgeport. And you were mayor at the time. And let's start off this way. It was Thursday, April 23rd, 1987, just after lunchtime, the 1 o'clock hour. What were you doing? How did you hear about this?
Put it in context, the day before was an annual event called Secretary's Day at the time. It's since been changed Administrative Assistance Day. But on the 22nd, I wasn't able to take the staff out for lunch as I would do on Secretary's Day. I would take the entire mayor's office. And this year we went to a hate to say it, a place in Lordship, Stratford, and not a local Bridgeport facility. And it was on the water, and it was a nice afternoon that we were having. And somebody came up to me, the bartender came up to me and said, "You've got a phone call." And I said, "Well," and this predated the plethora of cell phones. There was cell phones, but they were bulky things. They were like carrying around the nuclear arms codes. I took the phone call, and it was from Mike Daly of the Connecticut Post. I think at the time it was called the Bridgeport Post. And he said, "Mayor, we have an appointment at 2 o'clock. I think we should cancel it because something's happened at L'Ambiance. There's been a collapse." And so when I heard a collapse, I thought, well, maybe there was a partial collapse, a floor collapsed, or just couldn't picture what he meant by that. But I went to the group. I said, "We got to get back. Something's happening at L'Ambiance. We've got to see what's going on." We piled into the mayor's car. Sergeant Savino from Bridgeport Police Department was with us, and he put on the police radio, and there was a lot of chatter going on. Get to L'Ambiance and code something at L'Ambiance. So we're on I-95 coming to the Route 25 connector. And when you get on the connector, you would see L'Ambiance, and L'Ambiance would be going up. But when we got to the connector, there was no L'Ambiance there. We dropped everybody off at City Hall, which was just up the road from L'Ambiance. And I proceeded to L'Ambiance with Sergeant Savino, and we parked the vehicle, and we got to the site, and it was just total destruction. The first thing I saw was Bishop Curtis was tending to one of the workers on the site. He was proceeding to wipe blood off the individual's forehead. And it was just a sight of devastation, as if a missile had landed and just destroyed L'Ambiance. And the situation we encountered, there were just so many people on the site, and you couldn't fault them as much, because word went out to other construction sites in the area, and these were union workers on the site. Other sites are shut down, and their workers rushed to the site to provide assistance to do a search and rescue for their fellow laborers. The first thing we had to do was get control of the site, though, so that things could go in an orderly fashion. And Sergeant Savino organized with other Bridgeport police to cordon off the area to get some control of the site to allow search and rescue operations to take place. And that kicked in almost immediately. The organization that we really had help with was Frank Carroll, who was the president of the Electrical Union of Fairfield County. And he got the construction companies to send equipment almost immediately to the site to help with the rescue effort.
One of the things I just wanted to mention is people who have never worked in a city hall office simply cannot appreciate, do not understand the massive amount of responsibility that falls on the shoulders of somebody such as yourself. And, you know, looking back, here you are in your first term as the mayor of Connecticut's largest city. There's no playbook on how to deal with these types of disasters. The L'Ambiance Plaza was one of the first in U.S. history where a search and rescue effort with, you know, slabs of concrete was going to have to occur. We see this, unfortunately, all the time now, but we didn't then. Were you feeling overwhelmed, or did you just somehow have adrenaline kick in and just do what needed to be done?
There's no training session for it. At the moment, you don't think of the magnitude of the catastrophe. It's just doing what you can to bring out workers who were buried under that rubble. And remember my chief administrative officer whispering to me, and he said, basically to the effect, the buck stops with you. And one of the most difficult tasks I had that evening was after consulting with our emergency management officer, Jonathan Best. He gave me his observations of how the collapse occurred, the pancake effect, that there was likely to be no survivors from the 30 or so missing individuals who were still within the rubble. Many of the families of these men were from the Waterbury area, and they had come down to the site and were being attended to in the St. Augustine Cathedral Church Hall. They were expecting to hear what was going on and, you know, what was the prospects. And I went to that church hall, and it was something I didn't want to do, but it had to be done. I had to go in, and when I walked in there, somebody said, it's the mayor, and all the families gathered around me. And you couldn't mislead them. You couldn't give them false hopes. And I explained to them, we're going to continue looking until we bring out the last individual. We're going to continue day in, day and night, and we're not going to stop. But the likelihood of anyone surviving this catastrophe was very, very small. And the crying and weeping, it was overwhelming. And we kept our promise. We kept at it morning, noon, and night. And it was a rainy, cold week of search and rescue efforts, interrupted by a church service on the Sunday morning at the cathedral when we brought out the last body. The sun had broken in the morning. It was early morning, and the sun had broken, and there was a spontaneous religious moment overlooking the site. I remember vividly to this point in time, very long ago, but thinking back, it was very moving. It was very spontaneous. All these workers who had been laboring morning, noon, and night to try to find that one survivor, which we were not able to find. But when we brought out the last remains, we had kept our commitment to the families that we weren't going to leave anybody behind. Those are my memories. There was a lot that occurred during that week. There was missteps in the sense of people reporting that they've heard scratching or this or that, but the way the building had come down in the pancake sense, there was no place for somebody to have oxygen and not be crushed by the concrete.
I'm just wondering, after you've gone through something like this, Tom, which is just beyond words, and then months later, this brand new agency, well, 16 years old, called OSHA, comes out with a devastating report. I trust you were briefed on it before the public dissemination. And they essentially said that so many regulations were ignored, and there was such a lack of attention to safety concerns, and that, in fact, this lift slab construction, which we all went to school on at the time to figure out what that meant, but that there had been two failures of it before on that site, and yet the operation continued. I try and put myself in your shoes and say I wouldn't have been angry beyond words, but I don't want to put words in your mouth. What was your reaction when you heard those allegations?
My reaction was that 27 individuals didn't have to die. The lift slab construction was later banned from the state of Connecticut. Why wasn't it banned earlier? Like with any project, there weren't city inspectors on site 24/7. There's responsibility, you know, for self-reporting by the construction companies, and that didn't occur. We had immediately contracted with a nationwide firm. They came up with, if I recall, similar findings, maybe not as to the triggering cause, but the same situation that pointed to, especially the one that I keep going back to, that they rigged this jack that had failed instead of just shutting down and getting a new jack and fixing the joint. They just jerry-rigged it. And you know that it's right near Route 25, that the vibrations from those trucks and cars going by, if you didn't have a proper jack holding that up there, it's going to be slippage. And that's what occurred. But regardless of the cause, it was preventable. Afterwards, as we saw, new regulations went in banning the use of lift slab. One of the most notable deficiencies in the regulations was the lifting of the floors with workers still underneath and continuing to work. Every expert said you wouldn't have lost 20 some odd men if, when a floor was being jacked to the top, if those underneath were told to leave while it's going up. It's just simple safety measure. And that was implemented again afterwards. Naturally, at that time, every politician visited the site to offer their assistance, but there was only two politicians who came through. Lowiker was a senator at the time, and he called me from Washington. He said, look, I'm not going to come down to site and walk around. What am I going to do, he says. But I just want you to know, we just passed a bill giving Bridgeport $2 million to finance the search and rescue, what you're doing. Magnanimous of Senator Wyker, who's the opposite political party, and doing what he could without grandstanding it. He never took credit for it. That money, I knew where it came from, and I had always thanked him whenever I saw him afterwards. And the other one was Senator Blumenthal, who's made this a lifelong commitment to worker safety, spurred on by the catastrophe at L'Ambiance. He's been at every annual gathering of the victims' families. He's had legislation passed for worker safety. So those two individuals I recall very vividly, and they were very generous in their efforts to support us while we were going through this and in bringing lasting change to worker regulations, fostering worker safety.
Well, as you heard during the interview, there's an annual memorial service to remember those who perished in the collapse. It's attended by the Waterbury area families of those who were killed and all the union colleagues. Well, Tom Busey has been to every annual remembrance except one, when a snowstorm canceled his return flight to Bridgeport and he simply couldn't be there. And a couple of years ago, surviving families gave Tom a plaque to say thank you for all he did. Well, you also heard Tom speak about Frank Carroll. He was the head of the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers Union, and he was the man who made a lot of the phone calls and used his connections to get construction equipment and additional workers to the scene for the search and rescue operation. Well, Tom calls Frank Carroll the hero of L'Ambiance, says he was a modest man who stayed behind the scenes in the background. In the town of Monroe, on Route 25, 13 miles due north of the scene of the disaster, stands the IBEW Union Building, and it's named in Frank Carroll's honor. Well, that wraps up this episode of Amazing Tales from Off and On Connecticut's Beaten Path. There is a building at the site where the L'Ambiance collapse occurred, appropriately, a residential structure like L'Ambiance was supposed to be. It's called Renaissance Plaza. I want to thank our guest for today's program, Tom Busey, former mayor of the city of Bridgeport, the man who saw that city through those dark hours following the collapse of L'Ambiance. The answer to this week's trivia question. The question was, robots don't have parents per se, but this Connecticut man is still considered the father of robots. And who is he? The answer is Joseph Engelberger, the Newtown resident who brought the first industrial robot to life. Next week on Amazing Tales CT, we're going to take a look at Engelberger's life and how he did what he did way back in the 1950s. Amazing Tales from Off and On Connecticut's Beaten Path is a production of True North Associates, LLC. This is Mike Allen. Be safe, and please stay healthy.